Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Welcome back to the feed. Obviously, we've been off for a couple of days, but Evan and I are back at it tomorrow. Today's show is a little mock draft. It's very early, but the host of the quote-unquote Elite Eight teams, which you heard us talk about Brad Rowland last week, did a little mock draft. Now, every team will be covered, every pick will be covered, but just in our feed, you're going to have the top three. So in this case, in the first go-around, I picked second for the Cavs. You can hear about who I picked and why. Overall, in the second segment here, we also get to hear who all the other hosts and who they want to take, starting with the Warriors at number one in this circumstance. But that's all up on today's show. Again, we're in obviously an interesting place right now. The Cavs are starting to do some end of the season stuff, which is obviously its own kind of thing there. But, you know, we're chugging along. Evan and I have, again, some really fun stuff planned, and we're excited about where we're sort of headed here. But, you know, fun times, weird times overall in terms of where we're at here in the Locked On Network and everything going on. But thanks again to you guys for listening. Thanks for your support. Here is today's show, the mock draft, and Evan and I will be back tomorrow.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
This is Wes Goldberg with Locked On Warriors, kicking off our Locked On Podcast Network mock draft with the number one pick. And look, the Warriors going into this draft are in a really interesting spot. You kind of go through this rebuilding season, a lost season. Steph Curry goes down in late October. They end up having the league's worst record of 15-50. They have a 14% chance of landing the number one pick, but a guaranteed chance at a top five pick. And in our mock draft here, they get the number one pick. And with that, they have an opportunity not only to select a player who can contribute right away to a team that hopes to be a championship contender as soon as next season again, but also a player who may be able to sort of take the baton from Steph Curry a few years down the road. Maybe could become the Warriors franchise player of the future. And that's a lot of pressure for the Warriors. They haven't been selected this early in the draft since 2002. They need to maximize now their championship window. So you want to find a player with high upside, but you also want to find a player with a pretty high floor as well. So there's a lot of things at play here for the Warriors. Everybody, obviously, with the number one pick is on the board. A lot of mock drafts have had James Wiseman slotted into the Warriors. Surface level, look, that makes sense, right? The Warriors have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green penciled in to the other four positions. So why not take a guy like Wiseman, who has so much upside and could be a linchpin of that lineup? However, the Warriors like to use their formula. We saw this when they traded D'Angelo Russell for Andrew Wiggins. I think you downgrade as a player in a vacuum D'Angelo Russell to Andrew Wiggins, but Andrew Wiggins is a much better fit alongside Steph and Klay, and they want to recreate the formula that has helped them win championships and go to five straight NBA finals. And so when you kind of talk about that formula, during the Steve Kerr tenure, they have treated the center position as a committee position. They kind of approach it like, you know, a baseball team would approach the pitching mound with a bullpen. You know, you have guys coming through like JaVale McGee, Andrew Bogut, David West, Zaza Pachulia. They like to just mix and match guys and ultimately finish games, finish halves with Draymond Green at center. So then why would you invest all of that, not only development and just energy into a guy like Wiseman, who's going to need a lot of work when he gets to the NBA, but also the money part of this? I mean, we're talking about paying the first overall pick somewhere around $10 million a year. That's a lot of money for a center. That's more money than the Warriors have spent on a center under Steve Kerr and Bob Myers. So do they want to do that when you're kind of in on Marquese Chris, who emerged at the end of the year, and he's only 22 years old? He's not much older than James Wiseman. They like his upside. They like his fit within the offense. You still have Kevon Looney there, who they're trying to make the most of, even though he's coming off of an injury-plagued year. You could find other ways to supplement the center spot. And like I said, you ultimately want to finish games with Draymond Green. So do you want a $10 million player sitting at the end of your bench where he's not even developing in end-of-game situations, which are crunch-time, high-pressure situations that you like to test people in? So I'm not all the way in on Wiseman as the number one pick. So that said, with the number one pick, the Warriors are going to go ahead and select Anthony Edwards, the guard wing player out of Georgia. And I think he checks a lot of boxes. The Warriors need to add more wing depth. Yes, they acquired Andrew Wiggins in at February's trade deadline, but that's only a start. We're talking about a team that lost Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala, and Sean Livingston, and they need to backfill those positions. They've only done that with one player now in Wiggins. So you could argue they need two more wings, and to get one with so much upside like Edwards, with so much athleticism and the physical profile that he brings to the table, that's such a hard thing to find. It's a novel skill set in the NBA, and it's hard to find outside of a top five pick, right? Edwards is tremendously athletic. He gets to the rim really well. He's really physical. There's things you don't he handled the ball a lot at Georgia, and he was inefficient at times, but they started to move him off the ball toward the end of the year, and he was a little bit more efficient. He projects well as a catch-and-shoot player. And defensively, he's a guy who could at least switch positions 1 through 3. He can guard positions 1 through 3, and I think if you're the Warriors, those are the sort of things that you're looking for. When we're talking about the boxes that they want to check, because we were talking about that formula, a guy who can handle the ball, a guy who could score off the ball, and a guy who can defend multiple positions. He checks all those boxes. Okay, and there are drawbacks. There are concerns about his work ethic. There are concerns about his efficiency numbers overall. Can he contribute if he's not the main guy? Those are all legitimate concerns. But to me, he reminds me a little bit of Jaylen Brown when Jaylen Brown was coming out of Cal a few years ago and the Celtics selected him high up in the draft. Great physical profile, tremendous athlete, was in a bad offense in college, in an offense where he was asked to do too much. And you look at his efficiency numbers, and they're not as productive as that you would like, but you project him into a new role in the NBA, and all of a sudden, things start to click into place. A team like the Celtics with Brad Stevens understanding how to maximize Jaylen Brown's value. I see Steve Kerr being able to do a similar thing. Edwards fits the Wiggins template, too, where the Warriors acquired Andrew Wiggins believing that they could maximize him in a way the Timberwolves couldn't. Let's play him off the ball, all right? Let's make things easier for him. You put Andrew Wiggins on the floor next to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. All of a sudden, he has way more space to get to the basket, cut to the rim, finish at the rim, and you take the ball out of his hands a little bit more. Maybe he puts a little bit more effort in defensively, and he becomes more consistent on that end because he still has those physical tools that we all believed he had coming out of Kansas. Same goes for Anthony Edwards. You could bring him in off the bench. I think he could be the Warriors' sixth man pretty much right away, score double-digit points right away. He'll thrive just cutting off of ball screens, take advantage of the spacing with Steph and Klay on the floor. I think if you're Anthony Edwards, the Warriors are a perfect fit for you, more than maybe any other team that's projected to pick in the top five. So the Warriors are happy with Anthony Edwards with number one overall. The way that this sets up the team for the rest of the offseason now is they still have a traded player exception worth $17.2 million. They could go ahead and use that to acquire that other wing that I was talking about, another veteran guy who could be a core part, a top six or seven part of your rotation. And they have the mid-level exception now, too, to go ahead and address the center spot because they have Marquese Chriss, like I said. They are going to work with Kevon Looney to see if he can get back on the floor and be consistent under contract. And I think with the MLE, you could go ahead, or even a veteran free agent minimum, that's more in the ballpark of what they like to spend on their centers. So you could acquire one or maybe even two centers, add those guys to the mix, and now all of a sudden you've addressed all of your team needs. You know, you've got maybe a wing with the TPE. You've got Anthony Edwards who can help facilitate, help run some offense, but also thrive off the ball, and you can go ahead and address the center position with one or two veterans in free agency. I'm Wes Goldberg with Locked On Warriors. Chris Manning of Locked On Cavaliers joins me next with the number two pick. Chris Manning, the host of Locked On Cavaliers, joins me now with the number two pick. Chris, what are the Cavaliers looking to accomplish in this draft?
You know, you could answer this a lot of different ways, but I think, you know, it's obviously a weird draft. You know, it gets the 2013 comparison, which is obviously scary because if you go back and look at that draft, the Cavs made a colossal mistake in that draft. But I think it's really just trying to find other pieces that you can add to a group of guys that I do think there is a lot. There is some talent to work with. I think Colin Sexton has exceeded a lot of expectations and gets better. I'm willing to give Darius Garland a little bit of a second chance next year to kind of assert himself, considering how weird his rookie year was in a lot of ways. The organization is extremely high in Kevin Porter Jr. They have some other guys as well, but I think, you know, if it's not necessarily finding your star guy, and I don't necessarily know if that guy, quote-unquote, exists in this class, it's just finding another guy that you like, finding another guy that you feel like you can build with and has a skill set that at least somewhat fits with what the other guys you already kind of have in place. I think for me that's the logical way to approach this if you're Cleveland.
So the Cavs have the number 2 pick. The Warriors selected Anthony Edwards with the number 1 pick. So who are the Cavaliers taking?
They're going to go with LaMelo Ball. I think it's actually a pick that if it happens in real life, whether it's at 1 or somewhere else or 2 in this instance, makes a lot of sense. I think LaMelo is a guy that, you know, people will kind of scuttle and say, oh, you're drafting another point guard to play with Colin and Darius. Well, here, my pushback on that is that, number 1, he has a very different skill set than those guys. If the best versions of Colin Sexton and Darius Garland are going to kind of have a little more scoring juice to them, Darius might be a little more capable as a passer than we thought, but it's never going to be his kind of lead skill. LaMelo, if he works out in the best way possible, that guy's a crazy good initiator, creative passer, all that stuff, and helping others in a way with playmaking that just isn't in Sexton's DNA. I really like Colin Sexton. It's just not in his game, and it's unclear how much of it is in Darius's game. Second of all, you know, he's a little bit bigger at 6'6" than the guys they have, so you know, it theoretically can move him around a little bit easier. But he also is a guy that, in terms of the spotlight, the Cavs don't have that young guy that I think really wants to command the spotlight. And this might sound silly, but it's not what Darius wants to do. He's a very quiet human being. Kevin Porter Jr. has a little bit of that juice to him, but it's unclear how good he ultimately will be. Colin's kind of a I just want to play basketball and work really hard kind of guy. Like, it's not his kind of thing to take a lot of the attention on himself. That is, for better or worse, part of the LaMelo Ball thing, and I do think he's a guy that can bring some juice to the franchise in that way. So I think it's an interesting on-court fit, it's an interesting personality fit, it's an interesting star wattage bet. And I do think among some of the top guys, all of whom have flaws, he's one of the better fits available to Cleveland.
I mean, he does have one elite skill already that we know of with his passing and his flashy playmaking and all these things, right? So I get it, and I guess you have to give credit to the Cavaliers here for just taking the best player available, despite, you know, having selected guards so often early in the draft in recent years. That said, are you imagining now that LaMelo is the starting point guard and you're running, you know, Darius Garland off screens and Sexton is a secondary scorer / playmaker? Can all three of those guys play together? Is somebody coming off the bench? Like, how do you envision that sort of working?
If I'm Cleveland, I think you obviously operate under the assumption, to kind of think about this, that you're probably starting Kevin Love and Andre Drummond up front next year. I think that's part of the calculus when I'm thinking about this. So for me, that's a lot of ball kind of needs there. So I think it's ultimately his long-term best fit is Colin Sexton. I don't know how he takes it. It's like a real kind of unknown thing here, but I think he makes a lot of sense as a leader of the second unit kind of guy. Can kind of take on that unit, take on a higher usage rate, and he can go there. And I think, you know, you could keep starting Jetty Osmond. Maybe you can find a veteran on the bargain bin this summer to kind of plug in it as a better, bigger three option, or maybe Kevin Porter Jr. grows into that role as well. He's certainly, again, like I really think he should be lumped in with some of the guys the Cavs have here because he's really, really promising and can at least do stuff right now. But I think the way you do it is, I think you, Colin goes to the bench, LaMelo kind of will guard sort of the twos. Maybe that's a lot to ask of him, but the Cavs suck on defense anyway. It's not like they're going to get better right away, regardless of who they draft, you know? So I think, you know, him and Darius as you're starting, Colin leads the second unit. It kind of gives the offense. I think if you do that, everything should flow just a little bit better. Instead of two ball stoppers and Drummond and Sexton, you just kind of have one in that starting five, and LaMelo can maybe increase the flow, and then you can go Sexton with and surround him with other secondary guys and Larry Nance in particular on the second unit there. And I think that leads you to kind of a more cohesive feel for the Cavs next year. For me, that's the way I think you do. You start with LaMelo, and you give him a chance to not only lead the team in some way on day one, even if he's not the on-court leader, but kind of help with the offense and really just kind of, if his best skill, which you and I think agree here, is his playmaking, is his passing, the guys you want to help him do that with. It's getting Darius open spot up looks. It's getting Kevin Love and getting the most out of Kevin Love and Andre Drummond, who are going to be here and be very expensive, but you know, you want to try to make the most of them while they're still around, or at the very least pump up their value so you can flip them ahead of the deadline next year.
And look, I hate to make this lazy comparison, but you think back to when the Lakers selected Lonzo Ball and traded then D'Angelo Russell, who they selected a couple of years earlier. Would that be in play for the Cavaliers to maybe maximize the trade value of a Colin Sexton or Darius Garland if it feels like LaMelo Ball is the leader and they want to go forward with that and maybe they are able to maximize the trade value of those other guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would be out of the question. I think you just look at the way the team is built. You look at the quality of those guys. I think they're both good. The Cavs will never say any of that publicly. I mean, I don't know if you remember this, Wes, but the Cavs made a really big stink out of trying to get Colin Sexton on all-rookie first team last year. Like, mm-hmm. There was just a big push very nice PR team did to kind of get Colin's awareness up a little bit. Shouts to them for doing that. But yeah, I mean, I don't think any of these guys are untouchable by any means, right? Like, I don't think it's not. I really like Colin Sexton. I just want to preface that because he is a very polarizing player in my little corner of the basketball universe here. Darius, not so much. But with both these guys, it's not like I think they're untouchable. You know, maybe if there's like I don't know how many point guard hungry teams there are right now, but theoretically, I do think that can make some sense. But again, I also think you could just see them trying to make all of them work, and then you know, you were that's also something you could just look at in 6 months or a year from now if the fit clearly isn't good, and maybe Collins boosts his value more, Darius has a rebound year, but you want to flip him for like a wing of some kind.
We'll wrap up with this. I mean, you take LaMelo Ball because you have the number two pick. Obviously, it seems like the Cavaliers are going to be high on him, but if he's off the board, who else are you thinking about?
You know, I think the Andre Drummond part of this really complicates it a little bit, just because I do think, you know, if he opts in, which I think is very, very likely, someone like, I'm not a big James Wiseman guy, but the appeal of him just isn't there to me at all if Andre Drummond is around. So if let's say LaMelo's gone, the guys that make the most sense to me would be Danny Avdija from Maccabi Tel Aviv, the Israeli wing. I think he fits a lot of needs in terms of what they need. Mm-hmm. And I like the fit. The Killian Hayes fit is very interesting as well, even though it's another guard, but another bigger guard that can kind of defend. You could look at Tyrese Haliburton again, another guard, but another guy who's like 6'5 and not 6'1 or something. Isaac, I mean, it depends on where they pick, but I think you could see Devin Vassell make some sense. Isaac Okoro makes some sense. I think any of those kind of longer, bigger guys all make some sense. And look, like, I mean, maybe Drummond does decide to go elsewhere, and that if that happens, who knows? You know, James Wiseman, Onyeka Okongwu all become kind of options. But for me, my personal two favorites, if LaMelo is off the board, it's Denny Avdija and it's Devin Vassell. I just love I'm just so in on drafting wings. The Cavs have never had a ton of great wings, and if you can, even if you still have two smaller guards, if you can go into next year with Kevin Porter Jr., Dylan Windler will have after missing this year with injury, will be back as a wing and a wing the Cavs really like. You can have Jetty Osman, and you will have another rookie wing here, and I think that is at least building up at a position that every team needs. And even if these guys need some work and it's not going to happen right away, if you cannot get LaMelo, who can kind of fluctuate between these two roles, and it's not Killian Hayes, I think going in the direction of a Devin Vassell, of a Denny Avdija would make a ton of sense, with Denny Avdija being like a guy that it's probably him, LaMelo, and Killian Hayes are my favorite three fits for the Cavs in this draft.
So to recap, with the number one pick, the Warriors take Anthony Edwards. With the number two pick, the Cavaliers take LaMelo Ball. Coming up next, the Timberwolves will select with the third overall pick. You can listen to Chris Manning over at Locked On Cavaliers. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Thanks, Wes.
Let me tell you about the most useful app on my phone. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, like business leaders, are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library. From self-help, business, health, to history books, Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you've always meant to read, but never had the time to. I like Blinkist because it helps me get to the key takeaways of a book in only 15 minutes so I can incorporate those learnings into my life immediately. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer. Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA and try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to RockAuto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Joining me now is Ben Beacon, the host of Locked On Wolves, who has the third pick. Ben, what is your team looking to accomplish in this draft?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. We only have one draft to work off of for Gerson Rosas, who, of course, has only been on the job for 13 months now. I think he traded up last year and picked Jarrett Culver. I think he's probably looking for defense, for shooting. And those are probably the top two things, which I understand is maybe we'll get to my pick here in a minute. Might make this pick a little bit weird, but I think those are probably the priorities. But we still have a lot to learn about what Rosas is going to be looking to do this year.
So with that said, who are the Timberwolves selecting?
Yeah. So I selected Obi Toppin from Dayton with the number three pick. Of course, I think we're going to do more than one of these mock drafts. I'm not saying I have buyer's remorse already, but the more I've dug into this, I think Toppin's one of probably a couple different directions that could go with this pick if the draft plays out as it has so far in our mock draft. So I have them picking Toppin at number three.
So you take Toppin with Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball already off the board. Would you have preferred Edwards or Ball over Toppin, or do you have Toppin higher on your board than those two as far as the Timberwolves fit?
As far as the Timberwolves fit, I have Toppin higher. I think I know that that's maybe controversial among Wolves fans. I think there's some, for me at least, there's a little bit too much of a similarity between Anthony Edwards as a prospect and Andrew Wiggins as both a prospect and what he was for the Timberwolves. And the Ball fit, I think he could work with D'Angelo Russell, but I have some concerns about, you know, could they work together on the floor together? What does that look like, especially defensively in the backcourt? So for me, I have Toppin ahead of both of those guys on my Timberwolves board.
Toppin's an interesting prospect because he gets comparisons to guys like Amari Stoudemire. He's a power forward. He could play maybe some small ball center. And, you know, he's obviously a very productive scorer at the college level. There's some questions about what he could do defensively. And so with your pick, I kind of wonder how that is going to fit along with Karl-Anthony Towns, who obviously is one of the most prolific scoring centers we've ever seen, but has his drawbacks defensively. Are you worried about that front court combination? How do you see that pairing kind of working together?
I mean, yes, absolutely. I'd be worried about it. I think at this stage, you're looking at if the Wolves retain Malik Beasley, who's a restricted free agent, the Wolves end up with a big three in that case of Towns, Russell, and Malik Beasley. And none of those guys are above average defenders. And you add a fourth. I mean, if you pick a guy top three, he's automatically part of your core. And then you have four guys who are below average defenders. So yeah, that would be a concern. And I think certainly the Wolves would be looking to beat teams 140 to 135. And it took a minute for a team like, you know, Rosas's background, he was with the Rockets for like 16 years, and they weren't a very good defensive team a few years ago, but they were a perennial playoff team and kind of started figuring out how to be a better defensive team and tweak the roster as they went. And I think that Rosas is a best player available guy, and he's more concerned about how can we make this roster as competitive as we can in the near future and then figure out the rest of it later, whether it's one of the aforementioned, I guess, four core players that end up getting moved. I think the offensive upside of Toppin next to Karl Anthony Towns is fascinating. I think you have four guys who would all be, top flight offensive players at their position. Beasley, we're making a little bit of a jump forward. He's only played 14 games in a Wolves uniform, but you look at what he did as part of the Nuggets core last year for a team that was the number two seed. I think there's a lot of upside there. I mean, he's averaged 20 points a game as a Timberwolf so far. So I think you add a guy like Toppin, who's very versatile offensively, can be a monster. You mentioned the Amari Stoudemire comparison in transition. On the negative side, one of the more negative comps that I think Chad Ford actually mentioned on his recent Chad Ford's Big Board podcast on the Locked On Network with Ryan Russillo was Derek Williams, which of course is a name that Timberwolves fans remember not for good reasons. He was the number two overall pick in the Kyrie Irving draft many years ago now. But I think he's a different prospect than Derek Williams. I think that he has a much higher assist rate, a better rebound rate, even better steal and block rates, even though he's not a good defender. Part of that's probably competition that he faced at Dayton. But I think he's a better prospect than Derek Williams. He may not be Amari Stoudemire, but the Wolves don't need him to be Amari Stoudemire if they've got Towns, if they've got D'Angelo Russell. They need him to be a dynamic third or fourth option on offense.
And I think that's what he projects as too. Was there anybody else? Who else were you considering with this pick? And how much of it is just the fact that you're looking for somebody to pair along? Like you mentioned, Rosas is probably a best player available mode at this point. But how much of this is just, all right, Toppin's the best big man available who projects to pair with Towns? How much of it is that, and who else were you maybe considering at that position?
Yeah, I think the other two guys who would be an option here, James Wiseman's one who at one point was almost a consensus number one pick, and I think he could play next to Towns, but he would probably start playing behind Towns, and I worry a little bit about some redundancy there, and I don't love that fit myself, but you could make that argument. And then the other name that if we I think for me is a very close 1B here is Killian Hayes. There's a ton of similarities between him and D'Angelo Russell, and so that can be seen as a good thing, can be seen as a bad thing. I think he's probably a little bit of a better defender, at least off the ball. And there's the ceiling is probably similar, where they're both going to be kind of borderline all-star guys. But again, you look at this from an offensive perspective, and the Wolves could truly be unstoppable offensively. And then you just got to manage to be mediocre defensively, and you're a playoff team. And like I said, you make tweaks from there, and you have Josh Okogie, you add a couple more defensive-minded guys. But Killian Hayes for me is probably top, certainly top four on my Timberwolves board. He probably would be my runner up here.
So now that you've selected Obi Toppin with the third overall pick, how does this set up the rest of the Timberwolves offseason?
Yeah, I think it would impact. So the Timberwolves, I mentioned Malik Beasley is a restricted free agent. So is Juancho Hernan Gomez. Both of those guys were acquired in the Robert Covington trade, and they both had strong 14-game stretches. The problem is that Hernan Gomez played, I think, two games next to Karl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell played one next to Karl Anthony Towns because he had the fractured wrist. And the Hernan Gomez Towns fit is really intriguing. Over the past few years, there's been Taj Gibson, there's been Dario Saric, and the Wolves have been looking for the ideal fit at the four. And if they draft Toppin, I got to think they let Hernan Gomez walk unless they can get him at something, whether it's a qualifying offer or, he doesn't get much of an offer in restricted free agency, because I think he's a pretty good fit as a starter next to Towns. The problem is the same problem they were going to have with Saric if they hadn't traded him to Phoenix a year ago, is he's probably going to get overpaid. He's kind of like a borderline starter backup big, and restricted free agency, a lot of times, guys, that's what happened with Tyus Jones for the Wolves last year when he signed with Memphis. He just got a little bit too much money. So if you draft Toppin, it gives you the flexibility to let Hernan Gomez walk and then also re-sign Malik Beasley and pay him whatever he gets offered in restricted free agency. And it's certainly going to eat up a ton of the Wolves cap space, but then you've figured out four of your five starting slots. You either start a Okogie or Culver at the other spot. And James Johnson has a $60 million player option. He probably almost for sure will pick that up and stay with the team. And maybe he's the starter at the beginning of the year next year, or maybe Toppin comes off the bench or vice versa, and Johnson gets traded in season. But I think this would at least, this pick will give us an idea of what the Wolves plan to do in restricted free agency in regards to Beasley and Hernan Gomez. We just don't know of course, there's the question mark of what kind of offer sheets are these guys going to get on the open market.
So to recap, the Warriors select Anthony Edwards with the number one pick. The Cavaliers take LaMelo Ball at number two. The Timberwolves select Obi Toppin with the number three pick. You can listen to Ben Beacon over at Locked On Wolves. Ben, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you.